It's the True Faith Podcast. I'm Alex Hurst, and tonight I have a chat with Craig Hope, who reports on Newcastle United and North East football, amongst other things, for the Daily Mail. Craig's one of the best football reporters in the North East, and I would advise everyone to give him a follow on Twitter, which we will put in the description of the podcast. So without further ado, here's my chat with Craig. So Craig, first thing I'll probably ask you is, no wins in five for Newcastle. Are Newcastle in danger of being relegated, in your opinion, this season?
Yes. It's a fairly straightforward answer. Of course they are. You've got to, you look at that squad, and Rafa warned at the start of the season, before September the 1st, that it wouldn't be good enough to survive comfortably, or at least compete in the top half of the table without significant investment, especially in key areas. That investment never came, so by virtue of the fact that it never came, then they are in a relegation fight. Rafa said there would be. He's made reference of that since. And you've just got to look at results. You said there yourself, Alex, no wins in five. Well, teams who pick up 1 point out of 15 are in a relegation scrap. Of course they are. You're just grateful, really, for the points they got at the start of the season. Those three victories against Stoke, Palace and West Ham. And Swansea, of course, away the three victories on the spin there. So you are glad they've got those points in the bag, because on current form, this team is 100% in a relegation fight. You can make the argument now, the presence of Rafa Benitez, will that be enough to keep them up? That is the argument I'm sort of hanging on at the moment, that Rafa, in terms of his organisation, his motivation, there's a degree of trust there. There's a degree of trust we didn't have with Steve McClaren. Now, Steve McClaren are better players and still got them relegated, because Steve McClaren was, for want of a better word, an idiot. But Rafa Benitez isn't an idiot. He knows what he's doing. You've got to trust him. You've got to keep that faith for now. But yeah, it is worrying, and I think there will be there or thereabouts come the end of the season, because there won't be significant investment in January, takeover or no takeover. Rafa's already said that. So come May, there will be there or thereabouts. Let's just hope on that final week of the season they're the right side of the line rather than the wrong side.
Pre-Burnley and after Palace were sixth, Do you feel that, I don't know, do you think any of the players maybe bought the hype a little bit about the, because the performances were so after your Burnley, your Watford, your Man United, do you think maybe there was a little bit of complacency set in, or is it just the way the fixtures have fallen?
Well, you know, if you look at where the fixtures have fallen, well, you can't argue that, because they've lost against Bournemouth and they've lost against Watford, so they were in difficult fixtures. No. They've lost against Burnley, that wasn't a difficult match. But the one thing what worried me was, I can accept the Burnley defeat. The Burnley defeat for an hour was everything Newcastle had been during the season until that point. Ugly, horrible, hard to break down, not pretty to watch. But then in the final half hour, whatever it was, the game is decided. It bounces one way or the other, 1-0 win and 1-0 defeat. You can take that, because with that, you're going to win one, you're going to lose one, you're going to draw one. 4 points out of nine probably does keep you up. But the Watford game, I couldn't accept the Watford game, because it was so un-Rafa-like that it was worrying. It was dishevelled. It was players looking as if they weren't really putting it in. Players looking as if they didn't really know what they were doing. No shape, no organisation, no discipline. In that game, they weren't everything which they had been during the opening sort of 2 or 3 months of the season. So that Watford match for me was a huge worry. They steadied the ship a little bit at West Brom, a little bit. I mean, the first hour was ugly, then it was disastrous all in one, really, and they managed to sort of salvage a point. Chelsea have almost got to write off to a certain degree. Has complacency crept in? I just think a lack of ability really has caught up in the shortcomings in the squad, which Rafa warned about. It's catching up with them now, and this is why we're seeing this awful run, which sort of threatens to plunge them into the relegation zone quicker than we ever really thought possible after that victory against Palace.
Why do you think he changed things so dramatically after the Burnley game? Because like you said, the Burnley game, it was wasn't a great watch, but it could have gone either way. You know, 0-0 probably would have been a fair result. And then for Bournemouth, he brings Dwight Gayle back, which people like me delighted for, because I really rate Dwight Gayle's a good player. But we kind of start playing this hybrid 4-4-2, 4-2-3-1. Do you think after that Burnley game, Raf himself thought, you know what, we're just not going to score enough here? And if he did think that, has it backfired?
Well, it has, yeah, because he almost lost faith in himself a little bit, because we talked to him a lot off the record, and up until that Burnley game, the criticism was there. I think after the Burnley game, I think it was Carragher, was it on Sky, accused him of being boring. One of the pundits said, when we next saw Rafa, he defended himself against that, and he said, listen guys, I'm working with what I've got. If it's 4-2-3-1 with Perez working hard in between, being behind Hosselu, and there's 0-0 after an hour, then so be it, I'm going to stick to that. So I couldn't believe it when he came out against Bournemouth with the, as you call it, the hybrid 4-4-2. It was almost as if he'd listened to the pundits, he'd listened to the criticism, and he'd listened to a section of supporters who were calling for Dwight Gayle to be introduced. And I was surprised at the team selection. Now, the first half against Bournemouth was fantastic, and you thought, bloody hell, Rafa, you should have done this from the start of the season. You could have been fifth, never mind sixth. But then it all fell to pieces in the second half, didn't it? I mean, that second half performance against Bournemouth was a warning. It was a forewarning of what happened against Watford, basically. The second half against Bournemouth ran into the 90 against Watford, really. So I was surprised he changed. I was surprised he went away from what he trusted so much and what had worked. And you say that he done it to chase goals. Well, they scored, what was it, one goal in 6 hours with the two men up front? So no, it didn't really work, and it did backfire, absolutely.
You just mentioned that you talked a lot off the record. How has he been in this run? Has he changed in terms of the way he speaks to the press or in his demeanour? I'd imagine he's not going to be delighted or as happy as he was start of the season, but how has he been, maybe with all the takeover speculation, do you think it's affected him in the way that he's dealt with the press?
The one thing about Rafa is post-matches, he changes post-match, he can be a little bit spiky sometimes. He very rarely gets elated. But he can be a little bit spiky or a little bit clipped, in which you saw after the Chelsea game he was, for example, on Saturday. But come pre-match, he's back to his normal self. He's positive. He's normally got a message to deliver. He never gets sort of dragged into little battles with reporters or holds any grudges, anything like that. He's always fair. He's always level-headed. You can see why players trust in him. I like him personally. I deal with him, what, two or three times a week where you sit down with him and see him. And I like him, I like him a lot. I think he's a smart man. I can see why players like him, I can see why players respond to him. But yeah, to answer your question, over the past two or three weeks, his mood has got, for example, to give you, to capture it all in one, is the Alexander Mitrovic debate. Great. Now, Rafa will tell us on the record, off the record, repeatedly, listen, supporters have got to trust me. I see Alexander Mitrovic every day in training. I'm picking him because I see more than you guys do, basically. So every reporter who writes Mitrovic must start, every fan on a radio phone or on a podcast or on a forum, Mitrovic must start. Why is he playing Hossler? Mitrovic is better. This has really gotten to Rafa's skin, this one topic. So he doesn't think Mitrovic is good enough to start ahead of Hossler or Dwight Gayle or even Ayoze Perez. So yeah, he has got prickly over one or two little issues, but still, when it comes to previewing a game, he's back to his normal sort of level-headed, cool self.
Do you think, I mean, certainly everyone listening to this knows that we haven't been calling for Alexander Mitrovic to start, but you're right that particularly the online Newcastle world, you know what, even in the away end at West Brom, even on the terraces or the seats against Watford, that vocal minority is so vocal about his inclusion.
Yeah.
Would you agree if I were to put you that maybe on Saturday, when Mitrovic come on against West Brom, he didn't change the game, as some fans or as cheerleaders would say, but he was all right. Even I can admit, I don't rate him, West Brom, he was all right. He come on, he probably did what he was asked to do. Saturday, everyone thought he would start. Mm. He didn't. And I suppose he was proved right with Dwight Gayle getting the goal, but he doesn't bring him on in that situation there on Saturday. Is that purely the game situation, or do you think part of that's a little bit him trying to show fans or get the message across that, like, you know what, I'm in charge here? I don't suppose it's a, you know, he's in a battle with these people, but even someone who criticises Mitrovic as much as we have in this podcast, even I found it bizarre on Saturday that he didn't come on. So is there a little bit of kind of trying to manage the situation creeping into substitutions and team selections?
Sometimes a little bit, but then on the flip side of that, he's brought Mitrovic on at times and it surprised me, and it's almost well, here you go, here's your man, I'm going to throw him on, he does nothing. And he, with Rafa and Mitrovic, it really is a funny one. He doesn't not rate him. Let me just say that. He doesn't think Alexander Mitrovic is rubbish. He just doesn't think he brings as much to the team as Hossler or the goal-scoring threat which Dwight Gayle possesses. So on Saturday, yeah, I was probably surprised that he didn't bring him on as well, but I think by that point the game had gone, hadn't it? I don't think Alexander Mitrovic is going to come on against Chelsea and change everything. So it is a strange situation, the relationship between Rafa supporters and Mitrovic. I don't think it's got a happy end, and I think ultimately it will end with Mitrovic leaving the club, be that in January, if Rafa can bring in a replacement, or if not, certainly this summer.
Do you think, from what you've seen or what you've heard, do Rafa and Mitrovic have any kind of relationship?
I wouldn't say they haven't had a bad relationship. There's no hatred there. There's been no fallout. There's been no bust up. I just don't think he trusts him as much as he trusts Hosselu to run about and win flick-ons. I mean, we're setting the bar pretty low here. You know, that is essentially what Hosselu is in the team to do, to occupy defenders and to flick the ball on. We've seen that he's not really there to score goals, is he? I think I've written in the paper twice recently that, you know, 5 million was supposed to be sort of shopping in the bargain basement. It actually looks as if Newcastle have overpaid 5 million for Hosselu. I really think he's been struggling. I think taking him out of the team finally was long overdue. He looks short on confidence. He always looks tired for me. He's a player who starts a game and he looks knackered almost after 5 minutes. I don't think he brings as much as Rafa says he does. Does he bring more than Mitrovic? Well, Rafa thinks he does, and you've got to trust that. But
very interesting, Craig. I suppose the same question could apply to the relationship between Jonjo Shelvey and Rafa Benitez. He hasn't started the last two games. He was rubbish against Watford, but so was everybody. A lot of people were really surprised to see Mo Diame selected ahead of Jonjo Shelvey on Saturday. You know, through the week he played Marino and Hayden, and kind of as a fan you think, well, you know what, we're trying to be solid West Brom. Gareth Barry and Jake Livermore, two physical blokes. On Saturday, do you have an insight to why Mo Diame seems to be trusted for these big games?
Not yet. It'll be a question we ask Rafa when we see him on Friday, absolutely. I fully expected Jonjo to come back in after the influence he had during that final half hour against West Brom, where he was picking passes. He made such a difference when he came on for me. We said there Mitrovic made the difference for me. It was Shelvey who came on and sort of forced Newcastle forward. I couldn't believe it didn't start on Saturday. I don't know. Like I say, we haven't seen Rafa since, so there might have been a niggle there, that there might have been illness. We really don't know. If it was just purely based on selection and form, and we've got to take it that it was, then it's a staggering decision. It really is, because Mo Diame offers nothing, very little. Does he even run about as much as he perhaps used to when he was at Hull? I covered Hull as well, obviously, in that final season. He was fantastic. He was brilliant in the playoff final. I was there that day, and I think Newcastle more or less signed him on the back of that performance, really, with the buyout clause. But since then, he brings very little to the team. He's got no real discipline. He doesn't use the ball well. Now, Jonjo Shelvey has got his faults, don't get me wrong, but I think in terms of football ability and what he brings to the rest of the team, he would be one of the first names on the team sheet for me. So to see him out of the team against West Brom, I thought, okay, fair enough, perhaps it's a kick up the backside after what was a poor performance against Watford. But I thought he had to restore him on Saturday, and we will find out in a couple of years' time the reason for that. But for me, Jonjo Shelvey would start every week.
It's interesting you say that. I mean, it's kind of, because we've spoken before, I know that you'd go and you'd ask Rafa that question both on and off the record. Some fans, I suppose, think they'll almost say on social media, why don't you ask this? Why don't you ask that? Is it pretty much you just go to a press conference and you just have a look what people are interested in and try and put across the questions fans want to hear? Or is it something that you and your colleagues at the Daily Mail would try and, you know, more interested in the fan opinion?
Well, to give you a bit of insight, what you've got to understand is when I go into working for a Daily Mail, a national newsletter based in London with a London desk and a national audience, I'm not necessarily going to get in the newspaper on a Saturday from a Friday press conference the reason why Rafa Benitez played Mo Diame ahead of Jonjo Shelvey. I'm not going to. It's with all due respect, it's a line for the Journal, for the Chronicle, for the Shields Gazette. I'm interested to know, so perhaps when we're chatting amongst ourselves afterwards off the record with Rafa, we'll ask him, why aren't you playing Shelvey? What's he done wrong there? Just to sort of to build your knowledge, really, and to keep abreast of the club that you're covering. In the actual on the record section of the press conference, to give you an example, last Friday ahead of the Chelsea game, we had 10-12 minutes with Rafa as the written newspapers on the record. Now, for 10 of those 12 minutes, we talked about Rafa in Chelsea. When he was at Chelsea, why did he leave? The section of supporters who turned against him. There's very few questions, actually, about the merits of 4-4-2 versus 4-2-3-1 or Jonjo Shelvey, Mo Diame. That was just the nature of it, because we're all fighting as national journalists to get our name in Saturday's paper. But yes, certainly, you are interested, and it's important that you do keep on top of these sort of more localised matters, if you know what I mean. That was just to give you an insight into the way that we question Rafa. Afterwards, when we're off the record, invariably that is a time when we will go back to things such as Mankio versus Yedlin or Lascelles versus Clark, that sort of thing, when we will sort of get into the nitty-gritty of team selection and get Rafa's real thinking, what he won't say on the record, and he'll explain to you why he's picking a certain player ahead of another one. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what he does say on Friday with regard to that, because it was certainly a surprise.
Do you think that Shelby, obviously there's been talk of England call-ups in England, they've got massive issues in central midfield, which is you know, probably going to affect them next summer as well, unless they find another solution. Do you think that Shelby has the trust of Benitez, and maybe we talked about maybe Richie when you're saying it's not a, he doesn't trust him as much as he does other players. Do you think that Shelby has got a long term place in Benitez's plans? Because there's a little bit of a, you know, people on social media, some stuff being said to us as a podcast, I suppose not a bad point, that he's probably not as good as he thinks he is. John Richard's probably not as good as he thinks he is. He doesn't score enough goals, he doesn't create enough assists, he doesn't really impact the game. I mean, we said it last season when we met Rafa, and he didn't mind us telling people that he wanted John Joe Shelby to affect the game higher up the pitch.
Yeah.
Picking the ball up the centre backs is all well and good, and playing it on the winger, it looks nice, particularly in the second tier. He didn't score many goals, etc. Do you think that Mikel Merino has almost supplanted Shelby in Rafa's plans as the man to build the team round?
Rafa really likes Merino, we know that. I think he probably rates Merino higher than Shelby, but for me, he's got to try and find a way to accommodate both of them in the same team. Now, I said there before that John Joe Shelby for me would be one of the first names on the team sheet. I don't think John Joe Shelby is a fantastic player. When you mentioned England there, I think he's a long way off. I just think in terms of what Newcastle have and what Newcastle offers, you've got to find a way to get the most out of Shelby. The argument we had there was Shelby versus Modiarmi. Well, that's no contest, isn't it? So for me, I would try and find a way to accommodate Hayden, Shelby and Merino in the same team. It's not really something which has been tried or really floated so far. That would also potentially allow for three centre-backs as well. So I think when Lascelles is fit, why not play Lascelles, Clark and Lejeune, or any three from Lascelles, Clark, Lejeune and Mbemba as well, and drop Richie or into a wing back role, or have Yedlin on the other.
Controversial shout that after Saturday. Drop Richie.
Well, yeah, it's true. Yeah, but just drop Richie altogether after Saturday. But yeah, I just think that he's trying. There's this debate, and you see it on the Chronicle website. Which two midfielders are we going to play? Is it going to be Merino and Hayden, Diarmi and Hayden, Shelby and Hayden, whatever it's going to be? Well, why not try to put three of them in there just to give you a little bit more stability in the middle of the park? Why not have Hayden as the holder, Shelby in front of him as Rafa wishes, been a little bit further up the park dictating things from a central berth in Merino, as we've seen for Spain under 21s. Why not put him even further again, and he's then able to influence the game with little cute passes in and around the sort of the final third of the pitch, the way Perez should be doing but isn't really. Now I do think Perez gets a little bit of an unfair rap, because I think the work ethic, the intelligence, the positional understanding, when he came out of the team, I think you actually saw what he did bring.
Yeah.
To a degree, and I couldn't believe that Rafa kept him out of the team for as long as he did. But no, for me, I would start Shelby. Is he as good as he thinks he is? Well, no, he's not, but that's no bad thing, having that sort of confidence and that belief in yourself. There's maybe one or two in the team who haven't got that sort of that inner confidence. So I would certainly start John Joe Shelby, and hopefully perhaps try and find a way to accommodate him and Merino in the same team.
You just sort of touched on it there for a brief second. Do you think Merino could play in that number 10 position?
Yeah, well, no, I don't know. We've never seen him there for Newcastle. Yeah. So if I said, do I think, could he play? Well, I'm judging that on one or two reports and a couple of clips from YouTube watching him play there for Spain 21s. I would certainly give it a go. If you look at his skill set, he's a tall lad, he's confident, he plays with his head up, he sees what passes around the corner, he's got a good shot on him. I would certainly give it a go. Why not? We touched on it there before. They've got 1 point out of 15 now. It's time to perhaps start trying something different.
Do you think that's what we saw on Saturday? No one, well, we didn't see that formation change coming when we did the preview podcast for Chelsea. None of us were saying he's going to match Chelsea's formation, go three at the back for the first time in the season. Do you think that is a case? Was it A, just trying to negate Chelsea, or do you think he's now just trying anything to try and get this team some points?
I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. We didn't see it coming in the preview with him. I've never seen him really match up to a team. Rafa does what he wants to do, and has his own game plan. It didn't work, clearly. It looked as if it worked for 20 minutes, and we thought, wow, Rafa's a genius. quite clearly is the way the game transpired, it didn't work at all. There is a little bit of, and this is what worries me, there seems to be a little bit of desperation creeping in with team selections, with formations. It's almost like a roll of the dice, and that isn't Rafa Benitez. Rafa Benitez knows what he is, he knows who he is, he knows what he likes, he knows what he does. There's a consistency about him. Okay, he throws in the odd curveball with team selection, but in terms of his game plan, the way he sets up, he trusts himself. For me, the past 3 or 4 weeks, it's almost as if he's lost trust in himself a little bit, and that is why I was worried, and that's why that Watford performance in particular and the way they set up for that really sounded alarm bells for me.
It was interesting watching them on Saturday. The thing that came along was either desperation or just a frustration from all of the players. I think Richie giving away that penalty at the end was the best example of that. Like, I don't know what was going through his mind when he kicked out of that player, but like, it was just seemed like he was just frustrated. Like, why is what we're doing not working? And especially for someone like him, I think. Talk about Richie for a second. I think there's 5 assists. He's got the most assists this season. Yeah, I don't think he's played that well. Does that make sense? Like, a lot of the games he doesn't seem as effective as he was, and obviously he's not going to be as effective as he was in the championship because we're playing against much better players. But
I've pointed out a couple of times though, he had a drop at this exact stage last season. I remember when he scored against Forest, which is pretty much like it was a year, it was this week or next week, Forest last year. I remember when he scored against Forest, it was almost like, there's Matt Ritchie, where's he been for the last 6 weeks? So trying to be a little positive about it. I just hope he's having another one of those massive dip in form, which he had, rather than not being good enough. But I think some people have said he's looked like the Matt Ritchie that Bournemouth were happy to offload compared to the one
we were happy to pay 10 million for. If you look though, he's the one player who Rafa doesn't drop, does he ever? He's the one player who he looks as if the cliche is the first name on the team sheet. And does he get tired when he does play and he's at it and he's full throttle? He covers an awful lot of ground. You can never accuse him of giving anything less than 100%. Perhaps he does get jaded. Perhaps Rafa just needs to manage a player like Matt Ritchie better, because the quality is there. I thought at times in the championship he was far and away Newcastle's best player in terms of the difference he made. I'm not sure. You probably don't win promotion without Matt Ritchie. I think more than any player, Dwight Gayle, not far behind, he made the biggest difference last season. I wouldn't lose faith in him just yet. I thought on Saturday it was strange. His body seemed to give it under almost. He didn't seem as quick, he didn't seem as sharp. He'd almost lost his head a little bit with his decision making. He just looked like a man who needed to be taken out of the team, be it for one game or two game, whether that's in terms of a physical rest or a mental kick up the backside, I don't know. But Saturday for me was a performance whereby it was in a day really. He hit an all-time low the game down at Chelsea. Rafa needs to manage that and start getting the best out of him again, because he's not a player you write off. He's not a player you drop and you say that's it. He's someone you've got to coax back to form, because he's so important to that team.
Moving on to the future, I think Benitez said in a press conference recently, and you'll be able to correct me on this if I'm wrong, he wasn't aware of how much money he had to spend in January. If that's true, then surely we're in a very bad place at the moment as a football club.
Yeah, he doesn't, because that quote was in the context of the uncertainty surrounding the takeover, basically. How much money have you got to spend in January, Rafa? Well, I don't know, because I don't know if Mike Ashley's the owner, if Amanda Stevens is the owner, or if somebody else is the owner. How much will he have? Well, he's got a rough idea, and to be honest with you, he has sort of shared this with us off the record, what he thinks it would be with Ashley and what he thinks it would be if the takeover goes through, which is looking unlikely. And it's not a great deal of difference. I think they are bound a little bit by FFP. So Amanda Staveley cannot come in and give Rafa £100 million. That's just not possible. It doesn't work like that. You're probably talking, what, if Mike Ashley's there, you've got 10 to 15 million. If it's Amanda Staveley, you've got perhaps double that, 20 to 25. Is it enough for me, and I think Rafa's probably thinking along the same sort of lines, you've got to go out and buy goals. You've got to go out and buy goals, be that a number 10, a new winger who scores goals or would create goals, or probably a centre forward. Just throw the lot at someone who's going to come in and make a difference in the final third. I think Rafa is good enough to organise what he's got behind that to make them resolute enough. He just needs something extra further up the field. Regarding the takeover, which is probably going to be your next question, I'll ask it for you, where are we on that? there's just a standoff basically between the offer came in, what are we now, Monday night, it was 2 weeks ago, that the news broke that Amanda Stavey had made an offer short, and it was reported at the time it was 300 million, it wasn't 300 million, I can tell you that. It was way short of that. Mike Ashley wasn't happy. He didn't like the way the deal was structured. He didn't like the numbers involved. He didn't like the clauses. There was a lot about the deal he didn't like. Now, he didn't reject it per se. He just didn't respond to it. It just wasn't accepted. So it's a case of negotiations are ongoing. And as far as I'm aware, as of sort of yesterday, really, or this morning, the ball is very much back in Amanda Stavey in her court with PCP. A couple of partners. It's up to them to come back to Mike Ashley with something what he deems acceptable. Now, is there a clash of personalities here? Is there a little bit of bad blood? It's probably the wrong word because they don't know each other well enough. But I just think there's a little bit of needle there in terms of how all of this has been played out, how the bid was leaked, the nature of the offer we talked about there, the structure of it. So all is not as well as it was between the two parties, say 4 or 5 weeks ago, and it was just sort of getting to know you and okay, you want to buy my club. I want to buy your club, you want to sell it, let's get together and do this. The fact that it's been 2 weeks without another offer suggests that there is a little bit of a standoff there. The chances of it being done in time for Christmas, I'd say, are almost close to zero now, which then has a massive question mark hanging over the club and the squad and the strength of it going into January and therefore the rest of the season. So, yeah, that is basically where we're at. We're awaiting news of another offer.
It's very hard to try and second guess or predict Mike Ashley. From a fan's point of view, or the easiest way of looking at it, the worse we are, the harder we are to sell. The closer we are to the relegation zone, the less the club is worth. Where do you think Mike Ashley stands on that argument? So if we were to be relegated, the value of the club halves, if even more potentially. So when you say it's an impasse and you say it's, the ball's very much in PCP's court, where does Ashley, in your opinion, come at this, like in terms of his willingness to sell the club? Does he recognise what I've just said? Is it even true that, you know, a quick sale for him, because the club is now 15th in the league, 5 points above the relegation zone, 1 month, 2 months time, that could be completely different, could be 4 points off 17th place. Do you think he is seeking as quick a sale as PCP are wanting to buy it, or do you think he's playing a long game to try and maximise the value?
Well, no, go back to his statement and it answers the question. Mike Ashley wanted the club sold by Christmas, so January wasn't his problem. That's why he didn't want to worry about January. He doesn't want to have to sit down in January and make the calculation of transfer investment versus the possibility of staying up. He doesn't want that. He wants that to be somebody else's problem. That's why he wanted it sold by Christmas. As it turns out, it's a very real problem for him. It's something he's going to have to consider. Not dissimilar, really, to the scenario we had 12 months ago when he had to weigh up investment versus promotion. Now, he looked at that squad and thought, Rafa's had enough, he's got enough to get them up. Go and do your job, Rafa, you get nothing. As it turns out, Mike Ashley was right. Only just, because there was a little bit of a stutter and it was nervous at times, but Mike Ashley was right. Now, this time, if it doesn't look as though there's going to be a takeover, I don't think you can't get away from the fact that that team, that squad needs investment if it's to survive. And if it's to protect the cash cow, which is Premier League football, basically. So yeah, it's a decision he didn't want to make. It's probably one he will have to make. And I think he will give Rafa money, be that 10, 15, 20 million pounds. He's got to.
Do you think the takeover speculation is something that's affected the players at all? Because it was around the Bournemouth game, I think, where it really started to intensify quite a lot. It sort of dragged on a bit, and I think everyone was really optimistic for a bit. And now everyone's sort of getting a bit more pessimistic about it happening.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think it's just players who aren't very good is too strong, but players who aren't brilliant, it's just catching up with them. That's all it is. I don't think the takeover really has had an effect on it. No, I don't. I think what we're seeing now from this squad on the pitch is probably everything we feared at the start of the season. After the Huddersfield game, remember in particular, the performance away there was awful, and I think that's pretty much what we're seeing now. You've got this sort of mirage in the those three or four games where they won and they climbed to sixth, and that was really, for me, a deviation from the norm. That was overachieving massively, and that was down to Rafa's organisation. It was down to a little bit of luck. It was down to one or two little moments of inspiration. This probably is a true reflection of where they are. I don't think takeover talk has really got too much to do with it. It's just it's an average, below average Premier League squad, which is struggling, and that's probably what we thought they would be.
Do you think Rafa is clued up in terms of negotiations? Is he kept up to date by either side of what's going on, as he is in the dark as much as the rest of us?
No, I think he knows. I do think he knows. There's been one or two times when we've been sat with Rafa and he said to us, guys, what do you know? What do you know? And we thought, yeah, pull the other one, Rafa. He knows as much as we do, if not more. Definitely, yeah. But there's people close to Rafa and around about Rafa who've played a key part in getting Amanda Staveley sort of to the club. Rafa had the meeting with her in the manager's office after the Liverpool game a couple of months ago. So, no, Rafa knows. Which is why it's quite telling that Rafa seems less confident if it going through, certainly in time for Christmas anyway. Long term, will it go through? I think everyone remains confident that yes, it will do. I think there definitely is a willingness from Staveley in the group to buy. They're not frauds. I think they do want to buy the football club. I just think they want to get whatever deal is best for them. And Mike Ashley, we know, wants to sell it. So if you're asking me, will it be sold? I would say yes. Fingers crossed, let's hope it does, because it needs to be. It really does need to move on. It just won't be done by Christmas.
What's been interesting for me is that Amanda Staveley is obviously this key figurehead, photogenic person that who can be linked to the deal in social media. You know, type in NUFC on Twitter and her picture will come up. But as fans, we know very little about who's actually buying the club, about who she represents, how much control is she going to have. Obviously, there's been reports and stuff. I'm going to ask you, if you know, great, you can tell us, or guess, what are the plans for these people? What do these people want to do with Newcastle United, and why do they want to buy Newcastle?
No, we don't know. Really don't know. We know that she will be installed as a sort of a figurehead on a day-to-day basis, the new sort of chairwoman, owner, slash type. But no, we don't know where the money's coming from. I mean, we've heard, I'm not going to say it sort of on the record, because we've heard rumours of it being from this person or from that person or from this country or that country. The truth is, no, we don't know. We don't know what the plans are, whether they want to throw millions of pounds at it and compete with the top six, or if they just want to keep it ticking over like Mike Ashley did. Listen, it could be worse than Mike Ashley. Yeah. You know, don't forget that. They could want to come in and run the club on a shoestring and take out every penny you get from TV money and all the rest of it and run it as a business. It is an investment fund after all, and investment funds by their very nature put money in to take money out and make a profit at the end of the day. So no, to answer your question, no, we don't know. We don't know until a takeover is completed and we sit down with Amanda Staveley, whoever it may be, and we get their intentions on the record.
And do you think that Rafa is, you said that he spoke to her in his office, he obviously, is it very much a case of he wants the sale to go through, even though he's a little bit in the dark, just because anything's got to be better than working under Mike Ashley?
I think so, yeah. I think he realises that the constraints under Mike Ashley, it's not going to work for Rafa. If Mike Ashley remains in charge, I think the clock will be ticking on Rafa's stay at the club. I really do. I think there's too much has gone on there now. January was a disaster. The final few weeks of the summer window, they didn't sign a player during the final fortnight of the transfer window, which, if you'd said that to us in the middle of August, would have been unthinkable, really, the things Rafa was saying to us at the time. So, yeah, I think for Rafa to stay long term, I think there's got to be a change of ownership.
Is there a relationship there between Ashley and Rafa at the minute, or is it just...
No, there's not. No, definitely not. They very rarely, if at all, talk. Everything is done through Lee Charnley. There's annoyance from Rafa towards Ashley. There's annoyance from Ashley towards Rafa over the way he sort of conducted a lot of his politics via us guys.
Do you have any pressure put on you at all by Ashley's people?
No, not at all, no.
So that's one. That's just a rumour. That's you know, that Keith Bishop turned up at press conference. Again, this is rumours. I'm not there. You're there. Yeah. You can tell. But
no, Keith Bishop turns up. Yeah, he's been there. He hasn't been there the past few weeks. He's been there before. I've had a drink with Keith socially. There's no pressure there. There's no you can write this, you can't write that. He's very much there, just as Mike Ashley's eyes and ears, really. No, there's nothing. Perhaps his presence curtails Rafa to a degree. I don't know. Maybe when he's there, he realises that's it. A direct line back to Mike, so Rafa isn't as political as he sometimes can be. But no, listen, Rafa's his own man at the end of the day. Keith Bishop, I know Keith Bishop, Rafa knows how he wants to play his things. He's a bright man, he's a smart man. You touched on it earlier, didn't we? That I trust him as a manager, I like him as a person. I can see why players do, I can see why supporters do. So, you know, Rafa isn't going to be influenced too much by that. And what you've got to remember is a lot of what Rafa has done and said through the press and in press conferences, on the record, off the record, whatever, would have had previous managers sacked. Mike actually hasn't done this time, because I think he realises the value of having someone as big and as competent as Rafa Benitez at the head of your football club.
Very interesting. And I suppose as we look ahead to the Christmas period in January, you know, you said there maybe a figure of about 10 to 15 million quid. Obviously, you look at Palace in the relegation zone. Who else is in there? Swansea.
West Ham.
You've got to think they'll probably outspend Newcastle. Probably, I don't know that, but you're going to imagine that. They haven't been relegated recently. They'll know as much as anyone the value of staying in the Premier League. How does Rafa keep our heads above water, do you think? What does he have to do? I mean, you talked about keeping faith in his methods and the players, and it's kind of been worrying that since Kristinatsu and Lascelles have dropped out of the team, we've dropped points. Is it very much a case of it's going to take a little bit of luck to keep us up, or do you think that Rafa's going to find a way whatever happens?
No, I will take luck, absolutely. That squad, even when Lascelles and Atsu come back, isn't good enough to say, right, everything's okay now, brilliant, back to what it was. They go on another win and run again. That just won't happen. He needs to buy goals in January. He needs to sort of to get back to whatever was working at the start of the season. He needs to rediscover that faith in his own method. At the moment, it all just seems a little bit higgledy-piggledy. He's trying 4-4-2. He's trying 3-4-3. He's trying 4-2-3-1. He's trying Diarmi. He's trying Marino. He's trying Aiden. Just get back to what was so horrible about you at the start of the season. Get back to what was so ugly and bloody awful to watch, but was working. Listen, I'll take an hour of rubbish, of ugliness, if you then go and win 1-0. What I don't like is the Bournemouth, the Watford games. It was just all over the place, and it wasn't what Rafa stands for. It's not what he's about. So one, Rafa needs to rediscover what is best and what makes him a brilliant coach. Two, absolutely, you need the likes of Atsu and Lascelles back. A year ago, I never thought we'd be saying this about Jamal Lascelles, but he actually does make a difference. I think there's a little bit of a confidence and an aura about him which others in the team necessarily haven't got. He's another one who thinks he's a better player than he perhaps is, but as I said earlier, that's not necessarily a bad thing in a team which hasn't really got a great deal of belief and character and all the rest of it, those real sort of extrovert, larger-than-life players, which Lascelles has got that strut about him, really, and that can in turn feed to other players. So I think getting Lascelles back is important. Atsu as well was certainly playing well enough, wasn't he? He was doing okay. He was doing more than Murphy has for me.
Murphy was a mistake, or do you think it's too early to tell? It's such a big percentage of our budget went on.
Well, you've took the words out of your mouth. Was he a mistake long term? Is Jacob Murphy a bad player? We don't know. We really don't know. So I'm not going to say that was a mistake. Was he a mistake in the context of the season and the money Rafa had? Yes, he's got to be, because £12 million spent on a guy who was only coming to the team by virtue of injury to a £5 million signing and was keeping out of the team. Well, yeah, that's a mistake, because Rafa wasn't in a position to spend £12 million to build for the future. He had to spend £12 million on now. As a result of putting that money into Jacob Murphy, he had to go and sign Hostelu for £5 million. Well, why not put the two together and spend 17 or 18 on a centre forward and put goals into your team? So listen, Jacob Murphy might one day be a great player for Newcastle United. Let's hope he is. For now, I think the signing was a mistake. I think he's coming to the team, and although he's done, I don't know what you guys think, I'd be interested to get your thoughts actually, because he doesn't look strong enough. He doesn't look like he's got enough belief in himself. He doesn't look necessarily quick enough, or that there's just something lacking in his conviction. And he hasn't played badly. But I just don't think the team looks as rigid and as structured with him in it. What do you guys think?
From what I saw of him at Norwich and playing for the under-21s, he would just run at players and there was just loads of belief. He was fast, he'd go and try and get a shot off. When I've seen him play for us, he sort of starts to run at someone and then I'll check back, or like his shot's going astray and he just looks devastated at it as well. I think you've hit the nail on the head, he just lacks confidence at the moment.
Yeah, confidence, I think I wrote that he lacks confidence, he lacks conviction. He'll get into the final third and it'll be a sort of speculative cross or a speculative shot. There's no real belief in himself there to go and score a goal or create a goal.
He's coming at quite a tough time for the team overall as well, which I don't think's helped. And I was a bit confused why we didn't see him for like 10-minute spells when we were doing all right. Mm. I don't think he came on that much.
I think he's the antithesis of Matt Ritchie. Matt Ritchie's been playing badly, but getting results, two assists against Watford.
Yeah.
We need the Matt Ritchie, like we talked about earlier, we need the Matt Ritchie kind of product, end product, compared to the flashes of Jacob Murphy. And it's worrying that he's like you say, he's doing all right. I think at Old Trafford, when we're 1-0 up, he has a great chance that he fashions himself and that goes wide. And he was all right in the second half, but we're not a good enough team
to accommodate
players being all right in the second half. We need players to be making an impact. And
Newcastle fans are a tough audience to put yourself out in front of as well when it's not going well, and I don't think that's helped. But he's the total opposite of, and this is a guy we haven't seen enough of in my opinion, Rolando Ahrens, who just seems totally fearless. Mm. Every time he plays for Newcastle, he'll go at people, he'll try things, he doesn't get his head down.
Yeah,
it's curious. He started against Fulham in the Championship, but ever since he's been fit, Rafa doesn't seem to fancy him too much. I don't understand why that is.
I think it's with Rolando, it's a tactical discipline side of things. It's an understanding of the game. Rolando is very much an individual. It's a great point you make that Rolando doesn't want for belief or confidence. He thinks he's the best player in the world, but I've said this three times now, but it's not a bad thing. I agree with you. I would play Rolando ahead of Jacob Murphy. I just think it gives you that jack-in-the-box, something different, something unpredictable, which this team in the final third needs. Jacob Murphy just sort of conforms to the... He gets so far, he checks back and gives it to somebody else. There's no... Hosselu as well. Hosselu's almost scared to shoot on current form, really. Whereas Rolando Ahrens will try something different. I probably would play him ahead of Murphy, absolutely.
I think that just about does it. Is the large party coming behind me? So, Craig, thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, no problem. Cheers, guys.